I'm Brian.
I'm Griff. This is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information and the inspiration to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. And this is episode 182.
182.
Wow.
It's got a nice ring to it.
I know, 182. It's only, what, 18 episodes away? No, 12 episodes away from 200.
18. You had it right the first time.
182. Yes, I did, didn't I? Sorry.
Yes.
Only 18 more episodes to the 200 marker.
I remember when we hit 100 and you said, it's just a number. It's not a number. It's a milestone.
Last exit before gas. Mile 200.
Maybe.
Look, we might as well just call this the segment every week. It's called the Were You Busy This Week segment. So were you busy this week?
I was, and today especially so. And this was a busy week. I think we're going to cover some of it in the news, but it was a busy week for eBay.
And there was seller check-in on Thursday, yes. Yesterday, as we record.
Yeah, I got to interview Cami Nyquist, and that was a great interview.
Oh, Cami.
It was one of the segments. We had a bunch of the sellers join us for that. It was great to talk to her. She's wonderful.
She's been on the podcast way in the past.
Yeah. We should have her on again.
Absolutely. I'll call her this week.
It's amazing what she does with all of her business. And for those of you who want to check her out, it's Swede Mom is her business. She migrated every piece of her business to charity, which is just incredible.
Yeah. She's an inspiration. So, yeah, we should get her back on.
So, what about our topics this week?
Well, I'm really excited because this week, Brian, we've assembled a checklist for sellers to use to help boost their sales.
And our hope is that this checklist can help sellers with slow sales determine why their sales are slow and what they can do to help boost their sales.
Yeah. And you know where the idea for this comes from?
I don't.
Well, I like to scan old episodes looking for some reusable evergreen content. And way, way back in the fall of 2018, episode 6.
Wow.
I actually mentioned that we were going to provide a boost your sales sort of my sales are slow. What the hell is wrong with my sales checklist? And we never did. The next episode, it didn't happen. So I thought, I wondered if anyone noticed. But I thought, you know, it's a good idea because
it is.
We hear this a lot. So
they say the best time to plant a tree is 20 years ago. The next best time is today. So this is the best time to have provided the checklist was 2018. The next best time is today.
You know, your eternal optimism is an inspiration. We got that, and we're going to go into it. It's a point-by-point checklist, and we have a few questions to get in on the You Got Questions segment. Lots to talk about this week, but of course, before we can do anything, we got to talk about the eBay news, Brian.
So, first up this week, eBay continues to monitor the ongoing catastrophe in the Ukraine.
Yikes.
As a result of service interruptions by payment vendors and major shipping carriers, eBay has temporarily suspended all transactions involving Russian addresses. Check the announcement board for more details on the developing situation in the Ukraine and Russia as they are posted. And we did post something
about a week ago.
And
they'll update that post. So if you go to the announcement board and look for the Ukraine post for the beginning of March, you can check updates there.
Next in the news this week, in 2021, we rolled out new store features to help you obtain more visibility and engage more buyers. And in the most recent seller update last month, we announced an expansion of where your store information appears on the view item page, with your name, logo, feedback, and about this seller section getting a more prominent display across all devices. Building on those updates, we're adding additional ways to get your store in front of buyers. You may remember this, Griff. In the old days, sellers could add a frame with the store information around a listing's description on desktop.
I do. And in fact, I think I still have that old feature on my listings.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah. You know, they're still there if you have them. I don't think you can get them now, but mine's still there.
Well, we'll slowly be removing this listing frame.
Oh, brother.
Most of its features will move to other places in the view item page as part of these updates.
Oh, that's good news.
And one of the new features replacing the old listing frame will be the store category module, which will launch later this month in March. This new module will appear on your view item pages and will display up to 9 categories of your choice from the store and a see all button for buyers to explore all your categories.
Ooh, cool.
This will initially be available to sellers who currently have a listing frame set up on their view item page. In the coming months, as we phase out listing frames, it will become available to more sellers.
So I'm going to see it first because I have the listing frame still.
Which is good because then you can tell everybody about how the experience is.
I can lord it over everyone who doesn't have it. I've got it. Well, no, because listen, we always roll out new features in batches. So it's nothing personal, right?
Yes. And it helps prevent the risk of what we call site breakage. page.
Yeah, you don't want to break the site.
No. Your buyers will see this new module on desktop first. Over time, we'll expand this feature to mobile, web, and the eBay app. In addition to the new store module, there's also new enhanced search functionality to help buyers find your store, and there are updates scheduled for the legacy store newsletter as well.
Oh, I love the newsletter.
Yes. Sellers should take advantage of that.
Yeah.
You can see a graphic of the new store category module, as well as find details on the new store features launching at the end of March, the link to which we will, as always, put in the transcript for this episode, number 182.
And if you can see on the announcement board, there's in the post, there's actually a representation of what this module looks like. It's different than the listing frame, which used to have the categories on the side. This has 9 categories and it's on the top. Big improvement in design. I think it's going to make a big difference.
I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Yeah, me too.
And finally, in the eBay news this week, last Thursday, March 10th, was eBay Investor Day, and eBay CEO Jamie Iannone had some groundbreaking news to share about future enhancements to the buyer and seller experience on eBay. During the presentation to the public and to investors, Jamie announced that by the end of 2024, that's in less than 3 years, 50% of all inventory on eBay will be in one of several focus categories.
So that means like expanding the option for that some of the categories have now for, say, authentication.
Yes. And I don't know exactly what functionality or capabilities, but it's exciting news. Our sellers have seen handbags and watches, those categories in kind of like how they look on the site.
That we'd be promoting them heavily in exactly. Social media and in other places on the internet. So it makes a big
exciting
difference.
Exciting news.
Yeah.
So that's a huge change.
Yeah.
But the two biggest bits of news were about eBay Wallet, which will provide a way for sellers to keep some of their sales proceeds in an eBay account for use for purchasing on eBay.
That's for me.
It is.
Yeah.
And the launch of a new way to buy, sell, authenticate, and someday even fractionalize collectibles using something called the eBay Vault. Want to learn more?
I do.
Thought you might. Just be sure to visit the announcement board at www.ebay.com/announcements.
I have to confess, I found it confusing when I read this at first because I thought, what, eBay Vault? What is this? It's online something, but it's not. It's an actual physical location where you'll be able to store your authenticated eBay collectible purchases for either resale. And when it says fractionalize, it means sell off parts of it to different buyers. So you become investors in that collectible.
That's an interesting concept.
Right. And when we were talking before we started recording this, I mentioned that I found this confusing, but you said that a little research you did on your part in a seller visit, you actually have seen a huge business based around this. So there's an existing market.
There is definitely an existing market for people purchasing cards. I was unaware of the fractional element of this until the announcement yesterday, which is exciting news. And I could see that. If I think about some baseball cards, I mean, you know, $100,000 card or something, or even a $10,000 card, someone might have 5 friends and they say, hey, let's all go in $2,000 to get that $10,000 card. And they think over 10 years, it's going to go to $20,000 or whatever. They can treat it like an investment.
Yeah.
Not just to put in the spokes of their bike.
Which is my thinking. You know, if I buy a collectible, 99% of the joy of this is possession. But I guess for some people, it isn't.
I just think about how many $10,000 baseball cards went through my hands as a kid, and I had no clue.
No, don't do this. You'll drive yourself crazy. Don't even think about it. Well, Brian, thanks for the news items. There was a lot of news to digest this week.
It was.
And now it's time to go to this week's topic, slow sales, and what to do about it. Brian, you and I have been here a long time.
We have.
And in all that time, we've seen and heard a lot when it comes to eBay.
We have.
What do you think, Brian, might be the most common complaint we hear at eBay here from sellers?
There are a few. Unfair feedback.
Well, besides that, it's perennial.
Well, because it's our topic this week, I think I know. Why are my sales so slow?
Yes, that's the one. And taking the bull by the horns, this week we present our Why Are My Sales Slow checklist.
That's an odd name for a checklist.
Okay, then let's call it My Slow Sales Are Killing Me checklist.
Why not just the Boost Your Sales checklist?
Okay, boring, but I'll go with that for now.
Sales Booster checklist.
Okay, maybe something like that. And now presenting the Sales Booster or Boost Your Sales checklist. The first one is traffic. Number 2 is research. Number 3, the ever-popular item title and description, photos, is number 4, to reshoot or not to reshoot. And number 5 is free or paid shipping.
Those are 5 meaty little areas for us to focus on.
I thought so. When I thought about the order to put them in, I thought about my own advice to sellers every time someone sends me an email that says, hey, my sales are slow. And the first thing I tell them to do is check your traffic.
Your traffic metrics and reports will provide you with three important bits of information: impressions,
yep,
page views, and conversion.
And you can view these three data points in two ways.
For all of your listings, that is in aggregate, and for each individual listing.
That's right. And the aggregate view overall gives a pretty good idea of how your listings are being found and then clicked on by buyers overall. So the aggregate data is important. But we're going to focus it on the individual data, because when a seller tells me their sales are slow, I want them to look at the individual data for each of their listings. And that can take some time, but that's going to be important in figuring out what possible reasons they're having for slow sales. So that you can't take the right action until you know the cause, right?
Right.
So this will help you figure out the cause.
If your impressions are low, you can safely surmise one or more of the following. Your low impression listings are not turning up in search, probably because of missing keywords or item specifics, or
the market demand for your low impression items is in fact itself low, and very few, if any, buyers are actively searching for that item at the moment. And that happens. This could be because the item is unique with no comparables, so unique that no one's really looking for it. Or it could mean that there is little or no demand for that particular item, unique or not. But it could also mean that the right buyer hasn't found the item yet. But by checking the impressions for your low or no sales items, you can at the very least make one of the above determinations and proceed accordingly.
Which could be?
Which could be something, or it could be nothing.
Nothing?
Yeah.
How? Well, how could it be nothing?
Well, for example, this is something I figured out last week, and I'm going to talk about it as an example. I have a collectible UK motoring map from, I think, the 30s, and I listed it on eBay. And I know there wasn't a high demand for it because I did the research for it, and there were really no sales or no indication for it. And it is getting low impressions. It's been up for about a month now. And I did do some market research off of eBay as well, just to make sure. I couldn't find another example of it. So right now, I would consider it unique in the true sense of the word.
Yeah.
Not many, if any, buyers are searching for this map, and I know I have the right keywords and item specifics, so that isn't the reason for the low impressions, but I'm not worried. I kind of expected this when I listed it because my previous research led me to suspect the market for this map might be really limited, and it is a totally cool map, by the way. But I also suspected that when the buyer who is searching for it eventually comes to eBay looking for it, they're going to find it, and because it's priced right, they will buy it. For that low impression item, I have to make the assumption that I can wait it out. That's all I need to do is be patient and wait for that buyer to come up.
That's knowing your inventory. And internally, sometimes we call this long tail inventory.
Very long tail.
You know, it's stuff that you know is going to sit there for a while before it sells.
Yeah. For that low impression item, I can safely assume that all I need on my part is patience.
And some watchers.
Oh, yes, watchers. And at that point, I can start slowly lowering the price or maybe implementing some marketing promotions because now I got people watching it.
That's the impressions metric.
Yeah, and a nice metric, but actually it's nowhere near as important as what our next metric on the list, which is page views.
Yes.
Page views indicate the number of times that somebody has searched for your item, seen it in the results. That's what we call an impression. But then they actually were intrigued enough to click on the link for the item to actually view the item page.
So you've got them.
Yeah.
It's like a hook.
It's a hook. It's like a buyer was window shopping, saw something in your window that caught her eye, so she pushed on the door to go in for a better look.
And then
yeah,
she looked around, smiled, we hope,
yep,
but then turned and walked out. That's not what we want, Griff.
That is a shopkeeper's nightmare, and she was just one shopper. So if your impressions show a lot of traffic but no sales for the item, now you know that something about the way you're presenting the item is not opening her wallet. Lots of page views, no purchase. Something's up.
What's the usual reason?
It's usually price, and there could be other reasons. A lost buyer could be for another reason, for example, like
delivery time.
Yeah, it could be delivery time. It could be shipping as a figured into the calculation, depending on the item and the category.
I know I've looked sometimes between, if I know it's a used item I'm buying, I really hone in on the item condition, and that might bounce me out of an item
exactly
versus the other item I've already looked at.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the, I'm doing a price condition trade-off.
And you mentioned feedback at the very start of the segment, and there are some buyers who will check a seller's feedback and see that the seller has answered any negative or neutral feedback in a really kind of unprofessional manner.
Yes.
That will turn buyers off.
It will. The response is more an indication whether the person will buy than the negative left by the buyer.
It is so true. But anyway, you can see now that the difference between your impressions and your page views for a specific item can indicate a possible issue with the listing itself. So the rule of thumb, the bigger the difference between the impression number compared to the page view number, where the impressions far surpass the page views for a particular item, the more likely that you need to revisit that listing for that item.
And that leads us to our next item on the checklist.
Right. It's number two, research, researching price and demand. And anyone who sells on eBay or in any marketplace for that matter has to keep an eye on the market itself. Trends come and go. And on eBay, if somebody lists an identical item to yours and they offer it at a lower price, it's going to immediately put your item at a disadvantage.
But if it is genuinely unique, that probably won't happen.
Yeah, if it's one of a kind, it probably won't. However, it still can if you overestimate the item's uniqueness. So I see people say it's unique, and then you look and say, no, it's not. There's a few other examples.
And then that's why some sellers see kind of a slowly decreasing amount of sales.
Yes, and I can use an example from the fragrance category, which you know is something I have a lot of passion for. There's a designer fragrance I love, and it's by a brand called Andy Tower. And the fragrance is called L'Air du Désert Marocain, which roughly translates into the air of a Moroccan desert. Fragrance aficionados often refer to it by its acronym, LADM. If you search for this particular fragrance on eBay right now, you'll find items for sale or examples for sale on eBay in a price range from about $156 to $249. Same bottle, same volume, 1.7 ounces. And they're all brand new in sealed boxes. And to those totals, you still have to add about $9 shipping and $14 tax.
That's that quite rate. A range of prices. That's interesting.
But this is not unusual because you see this a lot on eBay. There's a well-known and trusted fragrance website that is offering the exact same fragrance, brand new, in box, same volume, for $140 plus shipping and taxes. And those come to about, for me in California, $161 total. So on eBay, the cheapest one available sells for about $180 when you add in shipping and taxes. So that's nearly a $20 difference between the item on this website and the exact item on eBay. Where do you think I'm going to purchase it?
On eBay, because you work here.
No, I'm not.
But that is, it's an interesting use case.
Yeah, and it's an example, but I see it a lot when sellers tell me my item isn't selling, and I'll go and find examples of it on eBay, but a lot of times off eBay at a much cheaper price. And I have to tell them, listen, you're competing on eBay. You're competing with the world.
Exactly. Everybody.
And here's the kicker. If a buyer searches for this particular fragrance on Google Shopping, which is a place where a lot of buyers start their search, the first one that appears is usually the least expensive one, the best deal, and it's from this website, not eBay. And seeing the others offered on eBay side by side with their prices that start $20 more and go up from there, well, Brian, you can see how the prices could put your listing of this particular item on eBay at a real disadvantage.
And you'll only discover this if you search.
That's right. And I do this all the time in order to stay up on my current prices for my inventory of, well, let's say fragrances.
What if I go through all of this for one of my no-sale items and discover my price is actually competitive?
Well, if your research shows that your price is pretty competitive, then it's time to take a closer look at your listing components.
You mean like title?
Well, yeah, that's a good one. That brings us to the third item on our I Ain't Got No Sales checklist. Item title and description.
I thought it was boost your sales. So the reason for low or no sales might just be that your title and the description are actually hurting your listing in some locations. So making sure they are formatted correctly is not necessarily just for showing up in eBay search, but for showing up in searches on Google as well.
Yeah, because as I said, a lot of shoppers start their searches on Google. There's a lot of sales to be had from people who start shopping at Google Shopping. And Google Shopping is the place they start, not necessarily eBay.
They do. Yeah. And a lot do start on eBay, but more and more buyers are starting on Google. Take, for example, a buyer who's looking for, what is that cologne called again?
L'Air du Désert Marocain.
Now I know why everyone says LADM.
Yeah, right. LADM.
LADM. So that one. if they start on Google, the examples with the very high prices on eBay are definitely not going to entice potential eBay shoppers.
And going back to titles and description, that's just those eBay examples, even though they're high priced, that are showing up on Google Shopping.
What do you mean?
Well, there are some eBay items that don't even show up in Google Shopping. In fact, there's a lot of them.
But eBay sends every single fixed price listing to Google Shopping in a single feed every 24 hours.
We do. But many of those listings get blocked from Google Shopping on the Google end, not on the eBay end, because they have something in their title or description, or sometimes even their photos, that violates the Google Shopping rules for inclusion in their marketplace feeds. And I'm going to put a link to that page and the transcript for 182 so that you can actually read their rules.
Do you have an example?
Yeah. Words like new in all caps in your title, it's going to get it kicked out of feed. Or free shipping in all caps, or even lowercase, saying free shipping in your title, kicked out of the feed. Or worse, because things that some sellers are still doing with lots of unnecessary, well, maybe ASCII characters, you know, trying to make the title look cute a la 1994.
So Google will block all of those.
Yeah, almost always. Some do sneak through for a short time. You'll see these exceptions on Google Shopping now and then, but they usually get pushed out eventually.
But as a seller, I might think, who cares if my eBay listed item doesn't appear on Google Shop? As long as the item appears in eBay search, why bother, right?
Well, not really, because if your item isn't appearing on Google Shopping and another eBay seller's is, guess who stands a better chance of getting a sale?
So what is the guidance for titles then?
It's really simple and it hasn't changed in 25 years. There's a format and it goes like this. Keyword, space. Keyword, space. Keyword, space. And so on and so on until you reach the limit.
And keywords specific to the item, not editorial words like beautiful or rare or wonderful.
Yeah, because those words actually can get your listing blocked in the Google feed.
Kind of like new or the other examples you gave.
And you see those. Spectacular oriental rug. Well, maybe you think so. It's not helping me figure out whether I want it or not. While we're on the subject of words, no marketing words or phrases, even saying something like made in the USA will get your item blocked in Google Shopping. And no, please no, please no extraneous punctuation like hyphens.
Seven exclamation points doesn't count.
No. Those are my least favorite. Commas and semicolons, of course, but exclamation points, those are the worst. Who actually is surprised or startled by a piece of merchandise? No one should be using those. Never. Then they will get you blocked.
So if the item is a brand name.
Yeah.
But the brand name is your first keyword.
That's right. Yes.
After that, just the fact?
Yes.
So listings that are not moving but have these types of titles, it could be one of the reasons that the listing isn't selling on eBay.
It would be a safe assumption.
What about descriptions?
Well, same here, because there's some things in descriptions that Google doesn't like. There's a reason for that matter that eBay has moved away from all those old tools, the editing tools that used to be available for adding like different color fonts or typefaces or type sizes in the description area of the listing tool. And the reason is outside search engines like Google Shopping, they don't look too kindly on any of those either.
So what should the seller who is still using fancy templates for their description do?
Drop them them sooner than later. Yeah, I know. Not a popular recommendation for those who take great pride in their special templates with their fancy frames and different colors and typefaces and little scrolly curly Q borders. But let's be frank here. No one comes to eBay to Google your fancy and, to my eye, really distracting templates. Your description should contain only the following: a description of the item that includes all necessary information to make an informed purchase, like measurements, detailed condition, maybe your return policy, and maybe your shipping policy, especially if you offer free shipping and you want to promote that. In the description, fine. In the title, no. And that's it.
One other thing I was just thinking about is, like, on mobile devices, it's probably even more important to do these things because you have less space. And if you've got a template and it doesn't adjust properly to that small space, removing all that kind of stuff is really important.
Those templates can make looking at your listing description on mobile really difficult. And it may be the difference where a buyer says, I can't be bothered. And you don't want them to walk off the listing. And that's what sometimes they do.
And the next generation of buyers are not on desktop. They are on mobile.
They're on mobile 24 hours a day. You see them in the subways. You see them on the sidewalk. You see them when they're driving their cars.
Yes.
They're on their phones.
Which is a little dangerous. We don't recommend that.
No.
What about a link to my eBay store?
Oh, yeah. You can include that. That's not a problem. But the rest of the stuff, just lose it.
A little blunt today, Griff.
I know, and I do apologize, but as a buyer, not just as a seller, but as a buyer and as someone with a little design and graphics background, I really can't stand seeing those templates. They make reading what counts, the description of the item, really difficult. It's like an obstacle has been put in my way, especially on a mobile device. As you said, they're annoying, and I think sometimes they're an obstacle to sales.
So
lose them. Just lose them. Go with the plain text on a white background with nothing else. I think the rule here with descriptions is KISS.
KISS. K-I-S-S. Keep it simple, seller.
Yeah, that's the eBay. That's the right version, not the original version, which we won't use.
What's the next item on our checklist?
The number 4 item on our solving the no sales blues checklist is photos.
Ooh, photos.
Yeah.
Isn't it difficult to talk about how to take a good product photo on a podcast?
Yeah, it is. And that's why we're not going to spend a lot of time on this one. I've boiled down the guidance to a few simple steps for taking great product photos. 1. If you haven't done it already, get a good light box with interior LED lights. Not, let me be clear, not those ridiculous light cubes with the transparent sides that come with those two puny little external lamps on stands that shine this really pathetic low light into the box from the side. Now, I have one. Cost me about $60-$70. It's 2 feet square. All the lighting is inside the box. And the sides have reflective material, works like a charm. And if you don't believe me, check my eBay listings, Griffville. You can look at my photos. Don't buy anything. I think my product photos are pretty good.
I have a question for you. You can give me a tip.
What?
Because I have a light box like that, and it has the lighting, the LED lighting from the top down, and there's lots of little LED lights in it.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I put an item in there,
that's reflective.
A reflective item, and I go to take a picture, I can see the reflection.
Exactly.
How do you avoid the reflection?
That box may have come and you may have missed it because mine came with one with a little translucent fabric that you hang underneath. It has hooks that go to the sides that hangs under those lights to break up those little white dots into a more even lighting. So it's not as big an issue.
I'm going to have to go back and look at the package.
Yeah.
Because I saved them because they gave me a bunch of different backgrounds and stuff.
It's in there. It'll have little hooks. That's what you need to do.
I just pulled the white background out. And
I'll send you an email with a link that shows how mine works.
Again, I learned something on the podcast.
Oh, that's good. Which is why you're a host. Okay, let's go on to 2 with photos. Always shoot with white backgrounds.
But?
No buts. Get rid of the blue and the red and the green.
And a black background?
Well, black, maybe. You can use those sometimes, you know, for very specific types of items. Like, well, cut glass looks great against black.
So white?
Yes, white. Most of those large light boxes with the interior LED strips come with washable, flexible white material that provides a seamless white background for your photos. And I love it that it's washable because it gets dirty over time and you don't have to replace it. You just use a damp sponge and clean it up.
Kind of a plasticky kind of thing.
Yeah, and none of those busy backgrounds because those sometimes get blocked. Not always, but they'll get blocked in Google Shopping. And it's not for anything else that's wrong with your listing, but it could be the photo.
So what about a camera?
You know, for years, I was a camera person, but not anymore. My advice is use your mobile phone, especially if you're an iPhone person and you're using a recent version of iPhone.
So no camera.
Yeah. If you really are liking your photos taken with your outdated, antiquated, vintage point-and-shoot or DSLR, I mean, really, who am I to tell you to stop? That's how you
tell
get your
us
bliss.
What you really think of.
But taking photos with, say, an iPhone or even the newer Android phones like Samsung or Google's Pixel, it's just a lot faster now when it comes to editing and uploading and even doing things like with the device itself, like framing the shot and focusing. And this is what I love, especially with the latest iOS. Thank you very much, Rob, for converting me. The editing tools on an iPhone are outstanding. They really are. In fact, there is so much to cover here when it comes just to editing your pictures in a mobile phone like an iPhone. There are so many tips and tricks here. It could be a topic for an entire episode, and I think it will be.
We should plan that.
Yeah, I think you should.
There's one exception, I think, that I could think of.
What?
If someone was doing really high volume where they sometimes have like their cameras hooked up directly to like a laptop or something like that.
And that's fine.
You know, but for the average seller on our site, the iPhone or their mobile device is the way to go.
Yeah. And a lot of sellers are realizing that if I use my iPhone, I'm getting really good pictures and I don't have to download them from a camera onto my laptop and then edit them and then upload them. You can just do quick editing as needed and then upload them right to your draft or create a listing on the iPhone.
Exactly.
Yeah. So it's just, it's a lot faster. But the point here wasn't so much about efficiency and, as it is about quality, because it's really important to get those listed products looking as professional as possible. And the other thing is, please take and upload as many photos as necessary. You got up to 12. You need sometimes as many as 12 just to show every aspect of an item. And I'm always amazed how few photos some sellers upload for their items.
Leverage the 12. I agree.
Yeah.
And don't use text overlays like borders or text promotions or distracting watermarks. Those can also get your item blocked from Google Shopping.
Exactly. Those are the photo issues that you want to take care of for listings that may not be selling.
And so what's next on the checklist?
Oh, it's time for item number 5 on the checklist.
We should have music for item number 5.
This is on our slow sales is my middle name checklist, free or paid shipping.
Okay, this one surprised me. I thought it was always best to offer free shipping.
You know, you think that, but actually, as it turns out, it isn't always the best shipping strategy. Some items actually sell better with slightly lower prices and buyer paid shipping.
So why do you think that is?
I'm not absolutely certain, but I think it depends on the category, at least from my observation and selling experience. And in fact, the newer inline pricing guidance that eBay provides when you are pricing an item at the time of listing or you're editing in the active view will sometimes actually show a percentage of the current or similar identical items that offer free shipping. And I think we do that for a reason, because you can then make a more informed decision.
Griff, I thought you were the free shipping king.
Well, I used to be the king of free shipping for everything. And then I thought, you know, I'm constantly telling sellers they should test. And I did have some items that weren't really moving. So I tested putting paid shipping on some of those listings that were free shipping, again, that weren't selling, even though their prices were often lower than the other prices when factoring in shipping costs. So I ran an A-B test. And for some of those non-sellers, I lowered the price and added calculated shipping paid by the buyer.
And the results?
And the results were more of those sold with buyer paid shipping and lower prices than they did with free shipping and slightly higher prices, because I added the price of shipping in part or whole to the item.
It must be due to some market psychology.
You know, it might be. I'm not an expert there. And I find that if most of the items in a category are offering free shipping, then offering buyer paid shipping might actually work for getting a sale. But again, it also depends on the price point. What you need for a margin, and of course, the prices other sellers are asking for their identical items, these are all things that come into calculation here.
So research free versus buyer paid shipping for items that are like or identical to yours.
Yes. And test buyer paid shipping or free shipping if most of your no-sale listings are also offered with free shipping. And it can work both ways. Test a new shipping cost strategy with a few listings that are not moving and track the results. In any event, for me at least, adding buyer paid shipping to some of my previous free shipping listings really did help many of them sell, and mostly with the same margins. So I came out okay.
You brought up one really important thing.
What?
You can test. We have 100 million plus buyers.
Yeah.
Test.
You should test everything. Don't jump in feet first, all listings. Test. Right. It's what we do at eBay. Yes. You should do it too. So that's the fifth point of my help me, my listings are dying checklist. Number 1, traffic. Number 2, research. Number 3, item and title and description. Number 4, photo. Number 5, free or paid shipping.
Wait, you forgot something.
That's not possible. What would it be?
What about promotions?
And now the sixth and for certain last item on our 6-point help me move my death pile or it goes into the dumpster checklist. Marketing.
Marketing, like promotions and promoted listings.
Those, of course.
And best offers.
And seller-initiated offers. All those can help your sales of slow items. If your inventory is just sitting there, smirking at you, and not selling like good inventory should, and you aren't employing any of the marketing tools that eBay supplies, well, then you should.
And we've actually spent a lot of time talking about Promoted Listings and Promotions Manager in past episodes, so you can and should explore those past episodes.
Yeah, and you can always learn more besides the episodes on Seller Center, where there's an entire section devoted to all the different promotional tools on eBay, how to use them, and how to get the best impact.
Of course, Seller Center.
Yes, we love Seller Center.
And we'll link to the marketing section in the transcript for episode 182.
But talking about past episodes, Brian, I found a very early segment with our good friend Liz O'Kane. You know Liz?
I remember Liz.
Yeah. This is from episode 6 of the podcast, way, way back in 2018. Let's go back and revisit part of that long ago but still relevant interview. What's your promotion strategy?
Honestly, my strategy doesn't really change throughout the year. This is actually my third holiday season as a full-time seller. I'm one that believes in knowing all the tools and using them year round. And as the holiday season approaches, flexing based on what my competitors are doing. So I feel that knowing the tools year round and using them year round is my strategy.
And also keeping an eye on the competition.
Absolutely.
And how does that impact how you manage and run a particular promotion? Does that mean that sometimes you have to change things about the promotion? And if so, what?
Absolutely. For an example, right now I'm running a promotion, buy two, get one free in one of my categories.
May I ask which one?
Right now it's all of my socks. Coming into the holiday season, socks are stocking stuffers. Socks are kind of universal, right?
Yeah, they fit right into socks. It's amazing.
They just really do. Yeah. And if I feel that that's not working for me or that strategy is not working for me, I know that I could easily end that promotion after letting it run for a while and getting a feel for how that's going and easily change it to, say, a markdown manager sale.
You have to be nimble. You can't just set it and forget it and walk away and think it's going to work.
Absolutely not. Checking on my promotions at least once a week during the regular season, that's a once a week checklist as a seller for me. During the holiday season, I may check that every day or every other day.
And I'm assuming that the one metric that counts is how many sales you're making.
Yes, it is.
So if you see that you're not making as many sales over the last week as you would have liked to, that's the impetus to actually make a change to the promotional strategy.
Yes, it is.
So what types of promotions work best for you?
It really depends on the category. Like I said, in sock, the buy two, get one free, that worked for me last year in another category. So I decided to try it on this one this year. In other categories, maybe say men's or women's sweater, a traditional markdown sale could work. Another thing that I like to do is if I do have, say, multi-quantity of a certain sweater, I will do the volume discounts on that also.
Are there any types of promotions that you've learned over the last few years that just don't work well at all for you?
Years ago, I used to, when promotions manager Markdown Energy came out, I'm like, well, I'll give 5% off. That doesn't really add a value to my customers. I like to add a value to my markdowns when using a markdown manager. The lowest I go might be 10% for a small amount of time, but I really like to offer my customers 20 to 40% off my items when I am marking them down. Another promotion that did not work well for me that I have seen is a buy three, get free shipping. I have taken that away because I've added more shipping into my item. So if the buyer looks at my items and half of them already offer free shipping, that's not really an incentive. So I have stopped doing those. Recently, I was talking to a fellow seller and we were talking about promotions and I asked them if they were offering a markdown sale on their items and one of value that we were talking about before. And a question that they asked me was, so do you increase the price so that you can mark it down lower? My question is, why would somebody buy something at $20 on sale when it's been offered for $20 all year? There's no value in that.
I can understand why a seller might try that strategy, but if,
yes,
especially if you're after buyers who are watching your items, they're pretty savvy about the price before the discount. So that actually could erode trust with buyers who are watching your inventory.
It can. And I think that that strategy could go one of two ways. Mm-hmm. I've just adopted the plan of not doing it.
Yeah.
Honestly, if something hasn't sold in 6 months, I want to mark it down to move it,
yeah,
to make way for new inventory for my buyers.
And you really want to mark it down. You don't want to play games. You just want it gone.
Absolutely. And sometimes if I'm thinking of it and I haven't run a markdown sale, the other tool that I really like is the seller-initiated offer. And the way that I see that is I am sending an offer to my buyer. When eBay sends out that offer, the buyer sees how much it is discounted by both dollar amount and percentage off. So I like to make sure that there's value in that offer.
And you find this is a successful strategy?
I do. I feel that what makes this, for me, successful is that I do offer a valuable discount. And I also strategize the time of day that I send these offers out.
Do you use the same percentage discount across categories or over time? Have you discovered that there are different sort of floor levels or sweet spots for the percentage discount that work for different categories?
I do offer different discounts. As a matter of fact, one of my strategies that I do like to use is what I call a tiered discount when I start a markdown manager sale.
Tiered?
I
make well, that's a tiered. Yeah, what is tiered?
So I don't know if that's the appropriate word for it, but that's what I've named it in my world.
Well, we're going to name it that. We're going to stick with that name then.
I will go in and start a markdown sale. And in the markdown sale event tool, you have the option to offer, let's say, 50% off. Mm-hmm. And then I can tier that down to 40% off and then tier that down to 30% off when I start my sale. I can then add items to each of those percentages, and it will all fall under the same sale. So that when a buyer sees one of my items and sees that it is 30% off, and the banner across it says up to 50% off, they can click on that and see all of my items that are included in that sale.
What a crafty way to use
that. Thank you.
Yes, that's wonderful. Yeah. Some sellers do promote their listings and others don't. What do you have a promotion strategy for promoted listings?
I actually do. I incorporate both promoted listings and listing promotions, sometimes separate and sometimes together. I play around with my percentages on my promoted listings based on the market of like items. I don't spend a whole lot of time digging. If I have something unique or a one-of-a-kind item, I may skip a promoted listing on that item.
If it's doing well.
If it's doing well.
Right. Why promote it if it's already doing well?
Sometimes I feel that sellers feel that it's an all or none tool. That's what's kind of great about promoted listings is you can pick and choose which items you promote. Right now, I have about 90% of my store promoted because I do hold back some of my items that I don't feel need the promotion. At this time, I typically have my store anywhere between 2% and 6%. I have not played around with trending rates for my items at this date.
Yeah. Well, Liz, before we go, I was hoping that you might, from your expertise and experience as a seller on eBay with promotions, have some promotional tips for sellers out there that you'd like to share.
My tip for sellers is to give each and every promotion and promoted tool a try. If you're new and you've never tried one, start with one promotion. I feel that a markdown sale is the easiest one to start with. My second tip is to give it time. Try out different strategies in different categories. A markdown sale for one day is going to net different results than a markdown sale, say, for a week. Give your first one a week or two and see how it goes. Next, try out another tool, and then you'll soon learn how to incorporate them and how to use them together.
So don't be afraid. Try everything. Try different combinations and be patient.
Absolutely. You're not going to break it.
Right. I mean, what do you have to lose, right?
Absolutely.
So interesting tips from Liz on promotions. And to recap, here are the six items on the damn I wish I was making more sales checklist.
It just gets worse.
Number one, traffic. Check your traffic numbers on a regular basis.
Number two, research price and demand trends using eBay's Terapeak as well as other online sites and marketplaces.
Number three, item title and description. Do over. Make sure your item titles and descriptions are not overly formatted and are showing up in Google Shopping.
Number four, photos. To reshoot or not to reshoot. Out of focus, poorly lit product photos on busy backgrounds can reduce sales.
Number five, free or paid shipping. Test both to see which works best for your item.
And number six, leverage all of the marketing tools available to you on Seller Hub.
And we'll post links to all of the pages mentioned in this segment in the transcript for episode 182.
And if you have questions or comments about our Boost Your Sales checklist.
You mean our Slow Sales Got Me Down So Low I Can't See Up checklist.
Oh, gosh. Our Boost Your Sales checklist, send them to podcast@ebay.com or call them in at 888-723-4630.
Thanks again, Brian.
It was fun, Griff. You got questions?
We got answers.
And our first question this week is from eBay seller Sarah, who sent this to podcast@ebay.com. Good morning, Brian and Griff. I can't believe I was first. Sarah, you just totally boosted my ego.
Thank you, Sarah. Thank you, Sarah. It takes sometimes.
Thank you for your podcast. I enjoy listening while working. I'm a very new seller on eBay. Just got going in January, and I'm up to 300 listings. Congratulations. Ooh,
more
That's
than me.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm a stay-at-home mom also, so I am just finding my happy place. I tried my first sale this weekend, and I cannot figure out why every time I make a sale with someone using my coupon, the sale pauses. I got a sale right away, then noticed I didn't have another later that night, so I went to look, and it paused. The same happened again after my next sale. Thanks for keeping us up to date and entertained. Sarah David.
Well, Sarah, first, congratulations on 300 listings.
That's great.
Yeah.
Especially just since January.
She's killing it. So, Sarah, there are two and only two possible reasons for a coupon to be paused. The first reason would be that when you created the coupon, you set a budget that was reached with the first use of the coupon, that first sale. The second reason would be that you set a duration for the coupon that has now been reached. Either of those two reasons would result in the coupons being paused.
And both of those settings are presented when you set up a coupon.
Right. And if neither of those came into play, email us. We'll have somebody look into it, but I doubt there's anything wrong. I think those would be the reasons.
Agreed.
Our next email is from eBay seller Lucretia. I wonder if her last name is Borgia. Lucretia, not Borgia, says, Griff, this isn't a question, just a thank you. I'm Plucky underscore Lucky, who wrote about business policies a few weeks ago. Of course.
Yes.
Yes, I remember that. Thank you for the podcast. It helped me get my business policies in order.
That's nice.
Yeah, our information has proven useful to someone. Lucretia goes on, but this email is to thank you for mentioning the new listing page. I do not like change. I would not try the new listing page. After hearing you say you like it and it's all you use, I decided to give it a try and I love it. I take pictures on my phone but use a PC desktop, so I would do a draft and switch to the phone to upload pictures. I was shocked. When I saw I was able to upload from my phone to my desktop. Another surprise was being able to upload a video on the new listing. Thanks for mentioning this. I do like it. Maybe change isn't too bad. I enjoy your podcast and learn something new every week. Thank you, Lucretia.
We love hearing from happy podcast listeners.
Yeah, and that feedback's important to us because, you know, we don't really hear from many people.
We have a whole community where we get tens of thousands of posts a week.
Yeah, but they very rarely mention the podcast.
That's true.
So we do appreciate it.
Our next question is from eBay seller Roy, who sent the following to podcast@ebay.com. Hi, Brian and Griff.
Oh, geez.
I see a trend. In alphabetical order, he parenthetically said. Yep. So I have a question for you regarding the shipping policies. I would like to offer my buyers the option to choose more than one carrier for shipping some of my items. When I go to create a new shipping policy, I can choose the carrier that I want, but I cannot change my item dimensions and weight per carrier. For example, if I have a box that's 20 by 20 by 20 and it weighs 5 pounds, I chose USPS Priority as my first carrier. But if I want to choose FedEx Ground as my second carrier, I can't change my weight. And as we know, FedEx and UPS use dimensional weight. According to the FedEx dimensional weight calculator, the weight should be 58 pounds. Is there a way around that? I also was wondering if eBay would one day calculate the dimensional weight for us as we process the shipping. I love listening to your very informative podcast and appreciate the time you put into it. Sincerely, Roy. eBay user ID. Almost everything 2010.
It's his user ID.
User ID. NB. I have a special coffee brew waiting for the perfect mug. Do you know where I can find one?
Oh, Roy. A mug is on the way. You were reading this question and I saw that look of perplexion come across your complexion. That, what is he talking about? And I did the same thing because I thought, wait a minute, he's asking for something I think that exists. But I double checked with Nate on the shipping team. And Roy, he confirmed what I suspected. eBay already factors in dimensional weights for calculated shipping for all carriers. So there's no need for separate weights and dimension for each service. That's part of the calculation already. So what you're asking for has already been provided.
As long as he puts in the dimensions and the weight of the item.
Yeah, you have to provide the actual dimensions and the actual weight. But when we calculate for UPS or FedEx and the dimensional weight comes into play because of the size, we already factor that in. So you don't have to have separate weights and dimensions for each of those carriers. We take care of it for you.
So in the scenario he provided, the 20 by 20, 20 box that weighs 5 pounds.
Yes.
eBay already factors in the dimensional weight charges for either UPS or FedEx and presents the correct postage to the buyer on the listing page and at checkout, or to the seller if the seller is offering free shipping at the time of label purchase.
That's correct. Thanks, Roy. Your question was my favorite type of request, the one that answers itself.
But I bet he's not the only seller who has that question.
Yeah, I wondered that too. So that's why we're including it sort of to, you know, make sure it's clear to all sellers that you don't have to worry about dimensional weight on eBay. When you purchase the label through eBay, we take care of that. When you enter the actual dimensions and weight, we'll figure out dimensional weight for those carriers that charge that or factor it. Thanks, Roy. Our next question is from eBay seller James, who writes to podcast@ebay.com. I have a question about having two eBay accounts. Brian, you're going to love this. I have seen several people through the years talk about their account being suspended for different amounts of time for a simple mistake they make. Some said it was their first time eBay has ever contacted them about a problem and never received a warning. I have received two Vero warnings in the past, but my store has never been suspended. I'm trying to grow my store now to a full-time income, and those stories are concerning. So my question is, if you have two stores with different emails and payout accounts, if one gets suspended, will the other one be affected in any way? Not asking this to try to play the system. Oh, no, no, no. Just a little security in case I make a mistake since I'm listing more now. Thanks, James.
So it's an interesting question, James. It would depend on the nature of the restriction or the suspension. When a seller account is suspended, the other accounts associated with that seller are also suspended. And different payout accounts won't differentiate the two accounts. We use a number of other items to identify and link accounts. It's not as easy as just having two separate accounts. We might not find it in the first 24 hours, but we'll find it.
If we've had to resort to a sanction of suspending your account temporarily or indefinitely, we're not going to let you get around that by using a second, third, or fourth account. And if one account is restricted for several Vero violations, the other account, well, it may be impacted. But this is not, as I've seen in the past, not a hard, fast rule, since cases are decided on a case-by-case basis. And usually it's the severity and the number of times it's happened. But again, it's case-by-case.
But if an account is suspended for any reason, including chronic Vero violations, all the other accounts will be suspended as well.
Yeah. So, James, the best course of action is to not rack up any more Vero violations.
In the stories about, I had one violation and eBay suspended me, I can think of only one use case where that happens, and it would not be from a seller who is a legitimate seller on our platform.
Exactly.
You know, you could imagine if someone's committing fraud on our platform, it might be the only violation, and we don't want them on the platform, and I'm sure none of our sellers want them on the platform either.
Absolutely.
But we try and educate our sellers about the best practices and the policies on the site before restricting an account. And our next question is from eBay seller Robert. Brian and Griff, did you just change this?
No, these all came in with your name first, and I'm perfectly okay with it.
So, Brian and Griff, recently I listed a quantity of two like items for a buy it now price of $199.99 each. The shipping was listed as medium flat rate box. When the item sold, the buyer purchased both of the items, yet the shipping was only factored in for one, namely $16.02 for the MFRB.
Medium flat rate box. Yeah.
My understanding is that the shipping cost reflected one item, not both. It happened that both items fit nicely and safely in the MFRB, but what if they did not? I would likely be out on the shipping cost as the value and combined weight would have resulted in my using FedEx or UPS. Did the fact that I did not use calculated shipping result in the one shipping fee for both items, even though the actual weight of the item was listed in the shipping calculators? Thanks, Bob Crockett, eBay ID Racer Trek. And if this is the Bob Crockett that I know, hello, Bob.
I think it is. So, Bob, I asked Nate to provide a response because I didn't have one, as I often don't. And here's what we learned. The shipping calculator does not use dimensions when combining orders from the same listing. When listing a multi-quantity listing in the future, we suggest that you predetermine if that inventory can still fit into the stated shipping service in one, in this case, flat rate box, USPS, which is good up till 70 pounds. If one buyer purchases two or more of the items offered, and you've done the research and you can fit two of the items in, then you'll know this, right? But if not, and for more than two items, it may be an issue, we would suggest to list with a non-flat service like just regular priority mail, which takes into account dimensions and weight, and maybe add extra services as an option that the buyer can choose from at the point of contact and the checkout, because they'll can see there's USPS will cost this, which, as he says, may be too much. Or the second service could be UPS Ground, which at the combined weight, which the calculator will do for calculated shipping, the price may be less. And then FedEx if they want to add that. So you give the buyer a choice, and they're usually going to choose the cheapest method. In doing so, the site would have appropriately calculated a shipping rate based on the weight of all the items purchased together at one time. So for, in this case, 4 pounds plus 4 pounds would have been 8 pounds. Post-transaction and pre-shipment, you could then select the most appropriate class of service. In this case, it might be flat rate medium box for the two items where it fits. But if the two did not fit into a single flat rate medium box, then you could select a larger box for both or two plain USPS priority boxes. The challenge with the flat rate service that you're offering, because it's flat rate and doesn't rely on calculation, is that the cost is independent of the weight of the shipment and the seller is constrained by the physical size of the shipment itself. Now, I hope this makes sense. His question was, should he use calculated shipping?
Yeah, in that use case, he should.
Yeah, because if you offer calculated shipping, then you can decide, based on how many they buy, which class of service to use. And you may even need to ship in more than one box to make it practical. And if that's the case, you can always print two labels for one shipment.
And Bob, if you still prefer to provide a flat rate shipping service like flat rate medium boxes, you could possibly use volume pricing to provide discounts on multiple purchases, reducing the price for additional quantities while at the same time charging enough to cover shipping for multiple quantities.
Yeah. And you're just going to need to figure out every possible scenario that could happen. How many of these would someone need to buy? And then account for it either in, like you said, volume pricing, which I think is a great way to handle stuff like this, or offering more than one shipping service and making sure it's calculated shipping so that there's closer to an actual value calculated. Oh, by the way, I should remind Bob, it's possible now for a seller to provide partial refunds to your buyers as an adjustment to shipping. So if they end up paying more than they need to, you can always delight the buyer by giving them a partial refund. This is a question that comes up a lot, and it's really difficult for eBay to build a tool or, you know, some sort of algorithm that's going to account for every single possible scenario because we don't know how many of these items fit in what size box. There's no way for us to know.
Right. I've had conversations with Nate about this problem, and I mean, it's a challenging one when you think about billion plus listings on our platform and then all the combinations of what could happen. Which is why sometimes shipping can come across as a little bit complex from a user standpoint or seller standpoint, because they have so many options to have to figure out. The key thing is just if you have a lot of variety of items, you're probably going to have a lot of variety of shipping options. If you've got only a few different types and sizes of items, it's simpler.
Yeah, and if you can figure out an attractive price point by adding free shipping, then you don't even have to worry about how many they buy and how many boxes you're going to put them in because you've already accounted for that.
I just do calculated shipping all the time now. And whether I do it free and I pay it or the buyer pays it, it simplifies it.
Bob, we hope that was helpful. And if you have questions about any of these questions, send it to podcast@ebay.com. And in the meantime, I want to thank everyone who sent in questions this week. This is a great range of questions, and your questions are what make this podcast extra special fun for listeners and fun for us.
And if you want to join the fun here on eBay for Business, call us on 888-723-4630.
Yeah, that line is open and waiting, 888-723-4630. And you can call at any time of day, any day of the week, leave your question or comment, and we just might put it on our next podcast episode.
And if you're not a call on the phone person, you can always email us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
Now, talking about my sales are in the gutter checklist, don't forget the other checklist, which is your podcast to-do list.
Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Got slow sales? Try implementing our 5-point.
6-point.
Try implementing our 6-point.
Boost your sales checklist.
That's what I was going to say.
No, you weren't.
Our 6-point.
Griff.
Okay. Our 6-point boost your sales checklist. Are you happy now, Brian?
I am happy. Very happy. And check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we referenced during the episode.
On our next episode, we'll have some seller advice for boosting sales and, of course, more of your questions and that tip I talked about last week for any spreadsheet.
Right.
We're going to hold it off till next week because we have so little time. We'll do it next week.
I remember that. Excel, we were going to do the Excel tip.
Yeah, so we'll do that next week.
And special thanks to everyone who sent in their questions this week.
The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.